Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. There are strange things done in the midnight sun by the men who moil for gold. The Arctic trails have their secret tales that would make your blood run cold. The Northern Lights have seen queer sights, but the queerest they ever did see was the night on the marge of Lake LaBarge. I cremated Sam McGee. Now, Sam McGee was from Tennessee, and Connection listeners know that's not a place that normally gets a heck of a lot of snow. But across the land, this winter has taken an uncommon icy grip. It seems we'll be waiting for months and months for springtime's welcome drip. So here's the question we have for you in the deep and the dark of this season. Is winter your time to frolic and play, or are you huddled inside, sick of freezing? Our number to call is 1-800-423-8255. Just give us a ring and let us know that you are still alive. And my most sincere apologies to Robert Service. This hour, Connection listeners, we are talking about the season, the soul of the season. We have a literature professor and a distinguished nature writer standing by, but we thought we'd go first to Ely, Minnesota. With us on the line is Aaron Chick. He's a fishing guide. Hi, Aaron.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thanks. Now, I have to tell you that most of the people I know who like to fish are huddled inside feeling sorry for themselves at this time of year. Is that how I would describe you?
Oh, heavens no. I look forward to the winter months. I really do. You know, skiing, there's so many activities that you can do on the outdoors, and you have to take advantage of the only opportunity of the year that you can do it. So most people are out and about enjoying it.
Now, do you spend most of your time, do you do any ice fishing?
Yeah, I do a little bit here and there. I do a number of activities, from ice fishing to trapping to backcountry skiing to snowshoeing. There's just winter camping to a variety of things. And winter has so many things to offer.
Is it a spiritual time for you?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times you get out by yourself and you're going across the lake. It can be windy and blowing. It could be 20, 25 below. You're out, you know, backcountry skiing or by yourself, and you see the, you know, you ski at night, or you see in the morning the sunlight come up. So you're really kind of in a bond with the wilderness. I mean, you're completely and utterly alone. So, yeah, I mean, it can be kind of a big chemistry that you build between you and Mother Nature, per se. It's really kind of a unique and very special moment.
Aaron, that's a great description. I want to thank you for being with us.
All right, thank you.
Aaron Chick is assistant store manager and guide at the Perigis Northwoods Company in Ely, Minnesota. We also have on the line with us Stephen Fibish. He's a weather hobbyist on the Upper West Side of New York City. And Stephen, you listened to Aaron's description of a rural experience of winter. What's different when you're in the city?
Well, we can do some ice fishing in Central Park or other famous places like that, but definitely we have more conveniences near at hand, and we can more rapidly escape into our apartments or even the comparatively warm buses if we happen to be able to get one going through the slush.
Is that the difference, though, that people in the city spend their time avoiding winter and people who are not in the cities can spend a little more time being outside and enjoying it?
Well, actually, I think on the whole, when winter does something especially interesting, like the snowstorm we've just finished up, a lot of people are kind of enjoy it as a change from normal urban existence. But after a day or two, they start griping about having to walk around the piles of snow and stuff like that. But I think that we city people get a certain amount of pleasure out of winter. It kind of depends, especially if you get heat in your apartment. Some people have problems with that, and then they could be pretty upset.
More like survival than satisfaction then.
Sure enough.
Stephen, thank you so much for being with us.
Okay.
Nice to have you on the program.
Always a pleasure.
Stephen Fibish is a weather hobbyist on the Upper West Side of New York City. Now with us also on the program today, Susan Felch. She is co-editor of Winter, a spiritual biography of the season. She's joining us from a studio at Calvin College, Grand Rapids, Michigan. She teaches literature there. Hi, Susan.
Hello. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And also from... where are we now? Woods Hole, the Cape Cod writer Robert Finch. He's author of 5 books of essays. His most recent book is Death of a Hornet and Other Cape Cod Essays. Bob Finch, hi.
Hi, Dick.
Now, I need to get both of you to weigh in on the spiritual side of winter here. Susan, why don't you start? Is this a season that you dread?
I would say it's a season that I have come to appreciate. I actually grew up not in a place where there was winter. I grew up in a tropical area. And so I've had to learn to accept winter as a gift and therefore learn how to come to a better response to it. I think I would
You're sounding like someone who's saying the medicine will really taste good if you just pinch your nose.
You know what? Not that, really. I do mean what I say about a gift. I am one of the people who likes to hunker down in winter. There's something about looking outside mm-hmm. while I'm inside. My co-editor, on the other hand, Gary Schmidt, grew up in New York and had his holidays in New England. And so for him, winter's always been more of a pleasure. So it was great fun for us to work together on this book to think about the different responses to winter and how we can respond to it as a gift, not just as something to avoid or survive.
Bob Finch, how do you anticipate or how do you make it through a winter?
Oh, I don't make it through. I revel in it. I think I've always loved winter since I was a small boy. I grew up outside New York City, and one of my earliest memories was a great blizzard of 1947, my younger brother had just been born and brought home from the hospital, and I gave him about 2 seconds look and went out into this enormous snow. You know, 4 mm-hmm. feet of snow to a 4-year-old is just an astounding thing, making tunnels through it. And so from my earliest memories, I remember looking forward to winter, and that really hasn't changed.
Now, you actually have a little piece of paper there, some of the writing of William Bradford, the historian who tracked the early days of the Plymouth plantation, because he speaks about winter, I suppose, in a way that sets the way that Europeans saw the winter season in this country.
Well, certainly the Puritans, Bradford was one of the Mayflower crew that came over in November 1620, and as we like to remind people, they stopped for several weeks on Cape Cod before they went on to Plymouth. And one of the very earliest descriptions of winter in American literature comes from Bradford's History of Plymouth Plantation. It's a description of the Cape in late November, and it goes like this. He says, "And for the season it was winter. And they that know the winters of that country know them to be sharp and violent, and subject to cruel and fierce storms, dangerous to travel to known places, much more to search an unknown coast. For summer being done, all things stand upon them with a weather-beaten face, and the whole country, full of woods and thickets, represented a wild and savage hue. If they looked behind them, there was the mighty ocean which they had passed and was now as a main bar and gulf to separate them from all the civil parts of the world. What could now sustain them but the Spirit of God and His grace?" Not something that Cape Cod Chamber of Commerce uses a lot.
But they went on to have a just awful winter, 1620
yes.
and 1621, didn't they?
Terrible, terrible, yes.
Now,
and it's something that persists. Yes, I agree. It's something that persists in our temperament. I had a professor at college who said, "The Puritans you will always have with you." And I think there is the sense that winter still presents a challenge, something to be overcome, something to survive, something to get through with the grace of God, even in our much more comfortable age.
Susan, when we look back at our historical sense of winter, it was, I suppose, more of a time of community than it is today where we all get to squirrel ourselves away and in locked apartments and houses, each with its own separate heating apparatus.
I think that's true. And one of the pieces that I discovered when I was reading Winter Pieces was a sermon by William Cooper, an 18th century American preacher. And he talks about the fact that in this cold season, our hospitality ought to be more warm because there are those around us who are suffering. And so that sense, I think, was there, but I don't think we've altogether lost it. I do find that one of the gifts of the season is that as it becomes colder and we might tend to shrink into ourselves, it is also a time to look around at those who might be suffering from the cold, or to just want to invite someone in for hot chocolate or a cup of tea. So I think that's one of the gifts of the season, to invite us back into community again.
There is that Chinese poem in your anthology where it in many ways speaks to how the weather can cut people off and invite that sense of sadness of the season, though. Do you know the one I'm talking about?
Is this the one by the Confucian poet, Du Fu?
I think so, yeah.
Yes. Would you like me to read that?
Please.
Battles, sobbing, many new ghosts. An old man, I sadly chant poems. Wild clouds lower and touch the thin evening. Fast snow dances in swirling wind. A ladle abandoned. No green wine in the cask. Fire still seems to redden the empty stove. No news. The provinces are cut off. With one finger, I write my sorrows in the air.
I love the sense of the provinces being cut off.
Cut off, yeah, no news, and I'm isolated. And then that last line, with one finger I write my sorrows in the air, the kind of weightiness to that, and at the same time a vulnerability and a longing for something beyond, an understanding that we need help to get through the winter.
Now, Bob, you were saying to my friend Orit here that it is a time when you do a lot of your writing.
Yes, it is. And again, I think this is a matter of temperament. There's something about winter, about the cold, about the weather. We don't get a lot of snow on the Cape, but we get an awful lot of wind that seems to gather the forces together inside you, make you want to concentrate. And
it's not just because you can't be walking on the beach.
Oh, no. In fact, I spend more time on the beach in winter than I do in the summer. It's a lot more interesting.
It's a lot less populated, I bet.
Yes, that's the paradox, I guess, of winter here in a place like Cape Cod. We're actually much more closed in the summer because of all the traffic, and we don't see people in that we know because they're all hiding out or trying to get a lot done. Winter is when things really open up. The landscape opens up. People open up. We visit. There's a lot more social activity going on, and work goes better. That's my experience.
Connection listener, how do you experience winter? Is it a season to be endured, to be tolerated until the snow melts off the golf course? Or is it a time of the year that you look forward to? Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Winter this hour. We're back after the break. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. The U.S. posted a record trade deficit of
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon, and we're talking about winter. 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to hear from you. With us on the program today, Susan Felt. She's co-editor of Winter. It's an anthology called Winter, a Spiritual Biography of the Season. Robert Finch is also with us. His most recent book is Death of a Hornet and Other Cape Cod Essays. He's also the editor of A Place Apart, a Cape Cod Reader and co-edited with John Elder the Norton Book of Nature Writing. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. Susan, I wanted to ask you just about the language of winter. You make a point in your introduction that so many of the terms that we don't normally associate with the season are the terms that we use to define it. You know, I'm trying to think now, cold shoulders, frigid, cold-blooded, these are all terms that are in many ways linked with winter, even though we don't think about that.
Right. That sense of winter as a time to endure something negative. Later on in the anthology, we quote Dorothy Wordsworth, who talks about the glory of winter, and that strikes you almost as not quite right when you first read it. It's hard to think, I think, at first about the glory of winter, although Bob Finch has already talked about how he senses a sort of glory to winter. So there are people who glory in winter, but it's not the language we first think of when we're thinking about winter.
And Bob, I mean, even the whiteness of the snow, I mean, it's in so many metaphors, isn't it?
Yes. Well, I think that's, you know, one of we put all the seasons to our own uses. And if you just look at the poetry of winter and the poetry of snow, it spans the gamut of feelings and emotions within the same poet. I mean, one of the greatest poets of winter, I think, is Robert Frost. And many of his best poems are directly about winter, but you can find an enormous variety of attitude and response and emotion toward winter.
So what's your sense? Do we define our spiritual side by the seasons, or have I got that backwards? How do you see that?
Go ahead, Susan.
I like one of the ways in which Gary sums up our notion of winter, that winter, like the life of the spirit, he says, is never one thing alone. And so I think, again, that winter evokes from us, it evokes from us certain emotions, but it also creates the space in which we can both think about the harshness of life, loss, death, but also a time of waiting, expectation. Those are words we haven't used yet. There's a kind of anticipation to winter that can be kind of a time of preparation. And then also this glory and this delight and play and hospitality. And the amazing sort of thing about winter, I think, is that it evokes so many of these states in us all at the same time. I mean, you can look out and just be struck by the beauty of the sun on the snow and at the same time feel a kind of desolate isolation at the way that the whole landscape is flattened out, a kind of lunar landscape, as some people would talk about. So I don't see it as one or the other. I think that winter creates a space in which we can think and feel and be more aware of our spiritual states, but it also perhaps evokes those from us. I don't know if that makes much sense.
No, it's interesting. Bob?
Yeah, I tend to avoid in my own writing using overtly spiritual language, but I certainly think that winter not just is useful as a metaphor for various psychological and emotional states, but actually helps to create those states and gives us the language. Again, going back to the common phrases used for winter, the dead of winter, the winter of our discontent, mm-hmm. Blow, blow, thou winter wind, all the emotions that evokes. I sometimes wonder if, in fact, we would be capable of having certain emotions without the seasons, without the physical natural world around us, and that, in fact, climate and geology play a large part in our psychology and in our emotional or spiritual life.
1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Charlotte, North Carolina. Dick's joining us. Hi, Dick.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, thanks for calling.
Thank you. I was just struck after the news finished and I heard your promo to listen to the winter ponderings, and then I realized Susan was there at Calvin College where I went to school and lived in western Michigan, and I this whole program, even though I'm here in the mid-Atlantic and south, has just reminded me of all the looking out of my bedroom window at night and seeing these sort of It's a Wonderful Life scenes of thick and insulating snow, and being at the at Lake Michigan and seeing the sort of slabs of ice bobbing up and down the lake under a really heavy gray sky, and being outside every time there is snow and was snow, and it was such a comfort and insulation. It was not it wasn't cold to run away from. And now that I live in the South, it's almost like an experience, a truth you have to relate to people when we have a fraction of an inch of snow or something in the Carolinas or Florida. And you want to not just tell them you can drive better, but you want to tell them there's a whole experience behind this if you could only have it. It's really quite something.
Well, you did actually get a bit of a postcard from home about a month ago, didn't you?
Yes, we did. We've had more than our share of ice and snow in Carolina's terms this season, but it's been a welcome thing for the kids and us.
You still sound homesick.
Well, it's beautiful. It's beautiful there, and it's not beautiful that way when there's a fraction of ice on the road and it's gray and steely and gross. But when you're exhilarating and the huge sort of avalanche or blessing of snow at that depth and level, and you know it can freeze for days and the clouds can go away and you can see crystalline blue skies and at sunset the gradient from dark to orange to blue in a way you've never seen it before, only when it's at or below zero.
Well, you paint a great picture. Susan, your own anthology, I mean, Jamaica Kincaid and people like that,
right.
Play with the changes of the seasons, just the delight in having something new that Dick's describing.
Yes, I think that's true. And sort of undergirding that whole sense of, again, the change of the seasons, the delight in the seasons, the gift of the seasons, at least for me, coming out of a Christian tradition, I think back to the book of Genesis and after the flood, the promise that there will always be seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night. And that rhythm, that change, it's not always the same, and our response to that. So I was interested when Bob was saying that without certain seasons, would we even be able to evoke certain emotions or have certain responses? I think that Dick down in North Carolina ought to be a poet, though. He was painting gorgeous pictures.
And Bob Finch, as I'm listening to both Susan and Dick, I'm thinking of your place on the Cape and the fact that on top of the change in the seasons, you have that wonderful thing that a seashore or any shore gives you, where you've got the water meeting the land as well, because that's a terrific place to watch that change.
Oh, indeed it is. Could I read you something very short that might summarize the sense?
I'd love to hear it. Yeah,
that?
Go ahead.
Okay. This is from a book of mine called The Primal Place, and it's the chapter called Ice in the Bay. And it's something that I think is unique to this kind of a landscape, to the shore landscape, that constantly fascinates me and says something about the way winter reveals the landscape. Anyway, I'll just read it.
Yeah.
One calm morning in mid-January, mild and sunny, I went down to the bay shore where a wide rim of broken ice already stretched out over 100 yards from the beach. By the end of the month, it would spread well beyond sight, but already the silence of the shoreline was arresting, even a bit appalling. I stopped and walked out onto one of the larger rock groins, which still raised its bouldered back above the ice like the carapace of some enormous sea turtle breaking out of a white sea. Stepping gingerly across the slippery stones, I surveyed the barren majesty of the bay. Salt ice here is never a smooth, seamless cover like that which forms on our lakes and ponds, but like the earth's crust, it is a mosaic of plates, solid in themselves, but still subject to movement by the hidden tides. Like old people who have lost their flexibility yet are forced to change in a cold, accelerating world, the ice ruptures in the process, creating numerous cracks and rifts.
That's nice.
I so appreciate writers like Bob who can be calling our attention to the details of the world around us. And I think that that's something about winter, to just look at it. What is the illumination that winter brings to parts of the landscape we might not see otherwise, and parts of the landscape that aren't there, like ice? We only get ice in the winter. So to learn to really look at it, it's a wonderful gift.
And winter is specific to place, too. I think it's very important to point out. I think one of my jobs as a nature writer and writers all across the country is to get at the specific nature of place in all seasons. And so when we talk about winter as if it were one thing, that's a handy myth. Winter varies enormously from place to place. I mean, this is obvious in a way, and yet we don't really recognize it. And I think it's up to writers and poets and observers and naturalists to make winter specific wherever it is.
Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255 to Indian Lake, New York now. And Greg's joining us from cold Indian Lake, New York. Greg?
Hi, Dick.
Hi.
Well, I can appreciate all of these poetic and positive ways to perceive winter. Let me just say that we are going through one of the most frigid winters in the last 20 years up here in the mountains of northern New York, with lows at night from 20 to 40 below and highs from minus 5 to 0 during the day. So, well, I can appreciate looking positively at the glistening snow and walking gingerly on the stones by the bay. After a while, you know, you just dream for temperatures in the mid-20s.
Can I send you a couple of tickets to the Masters, Greg?
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, today we have a nice, sunny, clear day, and believe it or not, we're in the low 30s. So this for us is great relief. We have really been in deep freeze. It's like living in Siberia for the last 2 months, and it's really put a toll on people's, you know, tolerance and patience. So snowmobilers are having fun, but the rest of us are experiencing severe cases of cabin fever.
Now, tell me something, though, Greg. A year from now, 2 years from now, will you be able to say, hey, do you remember the winter of 2003, how bloody cold it was and how we made it through?
Well, Dick, you know, I was in Watertown during that terrible ice storm in 98. I have never seen anything more devastating than that naturally in my life. There were 10,000 utility poles down throughout the region. They called in crews from around the country, even from Hawaii. That was the biggest disaster I have ever experienced. So this is, as long as they have shelter over your head and the electricity doesn't go out, you know, there's a lot to be grateful for. But
you know what I remember from that ice storm, Greg? I remember driving and walking beside the woods and seeing all these trees with their sort of top third broken off.
Yes.
and thinking of the devastation in that way. It was just uncanny.
Well, I was in the middle of Watertown in 98 on the north side, and it started to rain about 9 o'clock at night. It was a freezing rain, and I said, gee, I hope this doesn't go on very long. And 3 or 4 hours later, it was still going on. And by morning, you could just listen to the branches cracking all over the place. And but, you know, by daylight, there were power lines down everywhere. So that was the worst I've experienced. I mean, that was a real catastrophe, both in this area and also in parts of Canada. But this deep freeze that we've been going through is very exceptional, and everybody is grateful for these few days of relief that we have at the moment. So,
Greg, I want to thank you for your call.
Thank you, Dick.
And Bob, you actually zero in on the violence or the potential violence of winter as something about the season that needs to be respected.
Oh, yes. And in fact, I don't want to sugarcoat this. I mean, besides being aware of the real human costs of severe winters in many places on the planet, there's a great cost every winter to natural life as well. And part of what I do is try to document that. and put it in the larger context of cycles that go on.
1-800-423-8255. Let's go next to Louisville, Kentucky. Brenda's joining us. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. I am just delighted that you're on this topic.
Now, what's the weather like in Louisville? Are you missing winter?
We are not. We have snow on the ground,
right,
and we've had a lot of school closures due to ice. But the topic reminds me of the first year my husband and I lived in Gamble, Alaska, which is above the Arctic Circle, about 30 miles away from Russia.
That's above the tree line.
It is. And what winter did for us on that island was to open up our world so we could jump on our snow machine, as we called it, and go across the tundra safely where we wouldn't be sinking in the summer and watch the beauty of the winter landscape that was wind-shaped. And up on the hill where they would take the boxes and bury those who died, they had to leave them above ground because they couldn't put them below ground, they would put a cross at the end of each box. And in the winter, the snow would cling to these boxes, and in the sunlight, the crystals, it was so pristine. It was a place full of hope. It was just an amazing place to be.
It sounds like you miss that.
Well, what I miss is the awareness we don't have in the lower 48 that winter actually has hope, and it opens up parts of us that allows us to go places we can't go in the winter. And I see it happening even in some of the, quote, disaster places. Neighbors open up to neighbors. People join together. So to me, there's hope.
And I remember from my time in the Northwest Territories that in wintertime you could drive on the rivers, bridges across the rivers.
And
that's when people would go out on their snow machines, as you describe, and do their trapping and get all their travel done. Brenda, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
Our number is 1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, your thoughts about winter as a time to huddle inside or as a time to go outside. Certainly the right time of year to be talking about this. 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection from NPR.
Funding for The Connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
From Boston University, this is WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. Coming up on Here and Now at noon.
You're listening to The Connection from NPR. I'm Dick Gordon. Our number is 1-800-423-8255. A conversation about winter. The writer Bob Finch is with us, as is the editor Susan Felch. And we're going straight to Newton, Massachusetts. Dick's joining us. Hi, Dick.
Hi there.
Thanks for calling.
Pleasure. I was listening to you in the car. I just got home, wanted to call in. I don't know if it's in Susan's anthology, but I'm always reminded on this topic of winter and its psychological impact of a column by Russell Baker. It's decades ago when he was regularly in the New York Times. And he was talking about all of his friends who had moved to California and how they drove him totally crazy for the simple reason that they all acted the age they were when they moved to California. Because without the impact of winter and the changing of seasons, they just didn't age. And I always struck that, and I've actually seen it in some friends of mine since. So thought I'd share that idea.
Susan.
We don't have that particular piece. I wish we did. But it does seem to me that there is something about that change of season, which is very, very important to a kind of maturity. The two previous people who called in provided a wonderful counterpoint, I think, reminding us about the harshness of winter and not to overlook that. There is something that we need in terms of our own growing up, our own maturity, that comes face to face with harshness and death and real disaster, catastrophe, I think was the word that was used. And always to try to flee from that is not good for our souls. But then on the other hand, the the next caller talked about expectation and hope. And that was also so important, I think, about winter, that it's midst of catastrophe. There is this waiting and expectation and hope. And that's actually part of growing up, too, to know that the present isn't all that there is. So I love that kind of connection of memory and expectation.
I'm thinking, Bob Finch, of Dick's column and an experience that I had. I was in Japan talking to a gardener about global warming. I was in Kyoto when actually all the politicians were talking about it. And the gardener said to me, he said, yes, we have global warming. I said, how do you know that? And he said, because the cherry trees won't grow as old as they used to grow. I said, what do you mean? He said, well, unless we have a good hard frost to seal off each ring of growth each year, then the branches end up kind of rubbery and soft. And I mean, there's an example of just how winter is part of the aging process, even in your field of expertise in nature.
Yeah, I think we haven't talked about that at all, that winter is often just seen as the absence of life or the absence of process, and it's important in so many ways to the continuation of biological processes. And you gave a good example, but even of human survival. I'm thinking of places like, say, Newfoundland, where I've spent a fair amount of time lately, and the people up there depend on winter to be able to get out into the woods across the frozen marshes and the bogs to get their firewood for the winter. And many cultures are based, their survival is based upon winter. So it's an essential part. It's not just an absence of biological process. And in fact, one of the things I think nature writers do is to try to point out that there is no such thing as the dead of winter, literally, that there's always a lot going on. Right now in Cape Cod Bay, the endangered right whale is feeding on the plankton in the bay. You can go out now in the 20 inches of snow we have here and find the skunk cabbage literally burning, metabolizing its tips up through the snow. All sorts of birds and other animals that we don't see any other seasons of the year come here. So there's a distinctive life to winter as well as death.
All right, Dick, thank you for citing that Russell Baker column. That's a great reminder. 1-800-423-8255. To Boston now. Richard's on the line. Hi, Richard.
Hi, enjoy your program. Just quickly, I always remembered Arnold Toynbee's study of history, that one of the main theses of his book was that the birth of Western culture was largely due to the challenges of the winter, whereas there's sort of a latitude where it's too rough and you can't do anything, and then it's too warm or too tropical and you don't want to do anything. And he said that threshold of the challenge of harsh winter actually was responsible for the rise and advancement of Western culture throughout the world. And he actually cited New England as being a clear case that the harsh winters actually provided the grist for the great literary movements of this this area. So I just offer that Arnold Toynbee had a historical and cultural backup to your point.
It's a great observation. Bob, is this one that you know?
No, I didn't. I'm happy to know it, though.
I know. I'm scribbling down names here as well.
It's a current, it's a current running through his whole large book on a study of history. It's one of the main theses, so I offer that as another point, and I'll listen to the rest of the program. Thanks for your...
Richard, thanks a lot for that contribution.
Sure.
Susan?
I'm not sure that, as someone who grew up in a tropical country, I'm not sure that I want to embrace that thesis. I don't want to just write off large parts of the world that don't experience winter. I think rather to think of the ways in which those of us who do now live in winter climes, or maybe perhaps all of our lives have lived in winter climes, how we can, again, embrace that gift, how it can be a way of helping us to grow and mature. But I'm a little skeptical about writing off the rest of the world that doesn't experience winter.
I'd like to comment on that. I don't think the quote was intended to write off the rest of the world, but I took it to say that certain cultures are shaped by their climate.
I think that's
Western civilization has a distinctive character that can be traced to some degree. Not that it's better or worse necessarily, but distinctive.
Right. And I think one of the reasons we, in this anthology, we begin actually with Jamaica Kincaid's reflection on winter as someone who's coming to winter as an alien, an alien in the sense that the season feels very alien to her. And I think that that reflection is an important one to have.
Mm. Let's go back to our callers. Raleigh, North Carolina. Tony's joining us. Hi, Tony.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
Excellent. I just wanted to comment on your winter topic. As a Midwesterner, having grown up spending equal time between Indianapolis, Indiana, and South Central Kentucky, I have learned that the change of seasons, specifically winter in general, has basically defined me as an individual. And I didn't realize this until just this past year, having moved my family down to Houston, Texas, where there is no change of season. And it, for me, it was a most dreadful thing. There was no opportunity for that difference. There was no opportunity for the renewal, for the reflection that winter offers. And in the summer, you know, when there's so many recreational activities, you find yourself dreading the approach of winter.
What was it in yourself that you saw missing? How did you notice that this was missing?
As one of your callers pointed out, from his friends who had moved to California, where they never seemed to age, it's because it's all one long day, and there's no difference. There's no change. There's no opportunity. The best way I can express it is that I found that there was no opportunity for the reflection of what had transpired in my life over the last year, and there was no opportunity for a quiet time where I could renew myself, you know, physically, emotionally, spiritually, and there was no looking forward. Needless to say, in Houston, Texas, there was no looking forward to the coming spring and summer.
But it took actually leaving the winter season for you to miss the reflection and the renewal.
Exactly. Oftentimes, you know, we find ourselves not appreciating what we have, and then when we don't have it, we say, "Oh my God, what?" What happened here? And that's been the experience that I've had with no reflection, with no opportunity to have something to look forward to in the midst of winter. You know, when you're snowed in and the skies are bleak and gray and it's icy and snowy, you find yourself anticipating, or I find myself anticipating that coming springtime.
Well, Susan, this sounds like someone who's may have already read your book, even if he hasn't.
Well, I don't think our book is saying anything new. I think it's actually collecting what a lot of people have thought about winter and how it does give this opportunity for memory, for reflection, for anticipation, and it's one of the gifts of the season. It is very important.
Bob?
I was just wondering, Susan, I haven't seen your anthology yet, but mm-hmm. I wonder if it includes one of my favorite all-time poems about winter, Wallace Stevens' The Snowman.
No, it doesn't. But
can you tell us the story now, Bob?
Yes, please do.
Oh, well, it's a short poem. I could read it.
If you've got it. Yeah, sure.
Yes, I got it. Talking about the gifts of winter. Well, this Stevens has a little different take on it. This is The Snowman. One must have a mind of winter to regard the frost and the boughs of the pine trees crusted with snow, and have been cold a long time to behold the junipers shagged with ice, the spruces rough in the distant glitter of the January sun, and not to think of any misery in the sound of the wind, in the sound of a few leaves, which is the sound of the land full of the same wind that is blowing in the same bare place for the listener who listens in the snow and nothing himself beholds nothing that is not there and the nothing that is.
Tony, can you see that or hear that?
Well, yes, I can. And in a last comment, what I wanted to say with regard to one of your other callers, and most especially what that passage, that poetic passage, brings to mind is a very common saying in the Marine Corps, and that is, that which does not kill you only serves to make you stronger.
Okay, we'll take that. Tony, thanks for your call.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
It's a bit of winter as a laboratory of the soul, isn't it? To strengthen a time for virtue and to have us turn away from some of our vices.
I've always wonder about that, though, whether or not we don't impose that on winter, because if we didn't, we'd drive ourselves absolutely nuts.
But that's one of the challenges, right? Something that it offers. It offers us the opportunity to think about that rather than just being on with our busy lives.
Bob, what do you think?
I would agree that, to me, one of the virtues of winter is that it does disrupt our daily lives and our daily routine, and that in itself provides the opportunity. We may not take it, but it provides the opportunity to reassess. We don't want to be disrupted too long, but, the thing about routine is that you don't realize it's routine until it's broken, and I think that's one of the things that winter does do.
I wrote this story in a note to some people a couple of weeks ago, but it bears repeating here, that I have a friend who lives on Prince Edward Island, and when the snowstorms come in off the Gulf of St. Lawrence, and you get maybe two or three a season that really close the roads and make it impossible to go out, rather than wait for the plow, rush for his shovel, or do anything like that. He actually unplugs the phone and insists that that's the time that he allows to have his routine broken. He says it's the only time that he can actually do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, just look at the way that children long for snow days from school, and not just children, but teachers and everyone else. I mean, there's something so delightful about this time that's set apart and that's forced upon us. It is a gift.
Yeah, I think children felt a little cheated here in Massachusetts. So it's because their snow day happened on school vacation week.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
It's all right, though, isn't it, to look ahead to spring, to imagine a time when the snow, as it turns brown and slushy and unpleasant, will actually disappear?
Oh, absolutely. And again, I think that's one of the things we've been talking about the whole hour, is it's the rhythm, isn't it? We're not going to be in winter forever, but we're not going to be in spring forever either. And it's the rhythm, it's the change, it's the attentiveness to that, which brings about expectation and hope and memory and all the good things we've been talking about.
Yeah, I would agree. I think we're always seeing and experiencing whatever season we're in the context of the ones around it. We can't be in winter without remembering fall or looking forward to spring. That's again, something we take for granted, that we count on the cycle of the seasons. And we couldn't exist without that faith, that belief.
Robert Pinch, thanks so much for being with us.
My pleasure.
Bob's a writer. His most recent book is Death of a Hornet and Other Cape Cod Essays. Susan Feltz, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Susan's a professor of literature at Calvin College and co-editor of a new anthology called Winter, a Spiritual Biography of the Season. Earlier in the program, we talked with Aaron Chick. He's a fishing guide in Ely, Minnesota, and Stephen Fibish, a weather hobbyist in New York City. And thanks to WCAI in Woods Hole, Cape Cod, Massachusetts, for the use of your studio. Tara Murphy's our senior producer. My name's Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. To purchase cassettes and CDs of The Connection, please visit www.theconnection.org or phone 1-800-909-9287.
This is WBUR. Coming up next, it's